We have an agreement with an outside vendor, Smile God Loves You Media Services, to offer for sale audio recordings of this event. You can purchase a recording on a thumb drive, a link to an MP3 or CD outside this room at the Smile God Loves You table. Please help me welcome the past trustees from the Pacific region. All right. They are Tom H., Marita R., Kathy F., David N., Ginger R., Nancy H., Paul C., Greg M., and Ruth J. Today, our reader is Alexandria A.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Alex. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Area 03 and at the DCM for the new Spanish District 17 in Arizona. Okay. Leadership in AA, ever a vital need. Good leadership originates plans, policies, and ideas for the improvement of our fellowship and its services. But in new and important matters, it will nevertheless consult widely before taking decisions and actions. Good leadership will also remember that a fine plan or idea can come from anybody, anywhere. Consequently, good leadership will often discard its own cherished plans for others that are better, and it will give credit to the source. Good leadership, why am I having trouble with this? Never passes the buck. Once assured that it has, or can, obtain sufficient general backing, it freely takes decisions and puts them into action forthwith. Provided, of course, that such actions be within the framework of its defined authority and responsibility. A político is an individual who is forever trying to get the people what they want. A statesman is an individual who can carefully discriminate when and when not to do this. He recognizes that even large majorities, when badly disturbed or uninformed, can, once in a while, be dead wrong. When such an occasional situation arises and something very vital is at stake, it is always the duty of leadership, even when in a small minority, to take a stand against a storm, using its every ability of authority and persuasion to effect a change. Nothing, however, can be more fatal to leadership than opposition for opposition's sake. It never can be, let's have it our way or no way at all. This sort of opposition is often powered by a visionless pride or gripe that makes us want to block something or somebody. Then there is the opposition that casts its vote saying, no, we don't like it. No real reasons are ever given. This won't do. When called upon, leadership must always give its reasons, and good ones. Then, too, a leader must realize that even very prideful or angry, people can sometimes be dead right when the calm and the more humble are quite mistaken. These points are practical illustrations of the kinds of careful discrimination and soul-searching that true leadership must always try to exercise. From the 12 Concepts for World Service, Concept 9, Leadership in AA, Ever a Vital Need. Thank you.
Our timer for this session is Stan J.
Aloha. My name is Stan J. from Area 18, District 1, where I currently serve as the District Literature Chair. For this session, each of the presenters will give an 11-minute presentation. The green light comes on immediately after the presenter introduces themselves. The yellow caution light comes on at 9 minutes and 30 seconds, and the red light ends the presentation. If the red light turns on, we will thank the speaker with a warm applause. The presentation is being interpreted. The time allowed will be doubled to 16 minutes with the yellow light at 14 minutes. Sharing from the floor microphones will be timed at 2 minutes. The yellow light comes on at 90 seconds and the red light at 2 minutes, followed by loving applause. If the speaker is being interpreted, the time allowed will be doubled to 4 minutes, no, to 22 minutes, with the yellow light coming on at 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's get to it. Our first trustee is Tom H.
I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Tom. I was recently asked to speak about something that is forward thinking, something that would be helpful in your journey moving forward. I was asked to think about Bill's vision and his leadership essay, not necessarily about planning for AA's future, but what we could be doing today to keep AA a healthy, growing organization. The words healthy and growing stood out to me, so I focused mostly on those two words. In the foreword to our first edition, it states, "We are more than 100 men and women." In the foreword to our second edition in 1955, it states, "Membership is far above 150,000. In the foreword to our third edition in 1976, it states, "Worldwide membership of AA was conservatively estimated at more than 1 million. In the foreword to our fourth edition in 2001, it states, "Worldwide membership has just about doubled to an estimated 2 million or more." What will the foreword to the fifth edition say about our membership numbers? We all know that our estimated membership numbers have not changed much, if at all, since the fourth edition. We aren't growing, even though the worldwide estimate of alcoholics is nearly 300 million. If we aren't growing, are we healthy? Bob Pearson served as director on both AAWS and AA Grapevine, as a general service trustee, and as our general manager of GSO. In his 1986 rotation talk, Bob shared his vision for AA's future, and I quote, "I have no truck with those bleeding deacons who decry every change and view the state of the fellowship with pessimism and alarm. On the contrary, from my nearly quarter century's perspective, I see Alcoholics Anonymous as a larger, healthier, more dynamic, faster growing, more global, more service-minded, more back to basics, and more spiritual by far than when I came through the doors of my first meeting in Greenwich, Connecticut, just 1 year after the famous Long Beach Convention. AA has flourished beyond the wildest dreams of founding members, though perhaps not of Bill himself, for he was truly visionary. I echo those who feel that if this fellowship ever falters or fails, it will not be because of any outside cause. No, it will not be because of treatment centers or professionals in the field or non-conference approved literature or young people or the duly addicted or even the druggies trying to come to our closed meetings. If we stick to our close to our traditions and our concepts and our warranties, and if we keep an open mind and an open heart, we can deal with these and any other problems that we have or will ever have. If we ever falter or fail, it will simply be because of us. It will be because we can't control our egos, not get along well enough with each other. It will be because we have too much fear and rigidity and not enough trust and common sense. I mentioned rigidity. If you were to ask me what is the greatest danger facing Alcoholics Anonymous today, I would have to answer, the growing rigidity that is so apparent to me and many others. The increasing demand for absolute answers to nitpicking questions. Pressure for GSO to enforce our traditions. Screening alcoholics at closed meetings. Prohibiting non-conference approved literature. Banning books. Laying more and more rules on our groups and members. There is an area, one of the 93 areas, that within a one-year period had their delegate-elect submit his resignation, had its area secretary submit their resignation, had a longtime member who served multiple positions in the area remove their name from the open secretary position, and depending on who you talk to, nearly ran off the area treasurer. Do you know not a single past delegate from this area wrote a letter of petition to the area committee? Not a single past delegate from this area made a comment on social media expressing their concern. The past delegates from this area did not come to the area assembly each time it met to make a censure motion. Not a single member from the area created a Facebook page to discuss these resignations. Can you imagine, as an area delegate, area chair, or area committee, if the past delegates from your area demanded answers for all these resignations and came to each of your assemblies wanting to censure the area committee? If past trusted servants from your area behaved in this manner, I am not sure most areas would consider their area healthy or able to do the life-saving work of AA. In fact, I'm not sure most areas would survive in this scenario. I want to spend a moment on censure and reorganization. There has been a censure reorganization motion either discussed in committee or presented at the General Service Conference 6 times in our history, 4 of them in the last 4 years. Not one of the censure motions has passed, the last one receiving less than 10 votes. Does it feel like the motion to censure or reorganize the board has failed? To me, it does not. It feels as if the board has been censured. Does this feel healthy? Is this what helps the growth of the fellowship? How does this further the life-saving message of Alcoholics Anonymous? We know that the forward to the 5th edition will not state a growth in AA's membership since 2001. I fear if we don't get back to our mission of furthering AA's message, there won't be a need for a forward to the 6th edition. A few paragraphs from Bill's leadership essay. I know some was already read earlier. Quote, leadership is often called upon to face heavy and sometimes long-continued criticism. This is an acid test. There are always the constructive critics, our friends indeed. We need never fail to give them a careful hearing. We should be willing to let them modify our opinions or change them completely. Often, too, we shall have to disagree and then stand fast without losing their friendship. Then there are those who we like to call our destructive critics. They power drive. They are politickers. They make accusations. Maybe they are violent, malicious. They pitch gobs of rumor, gossip, and general scuttlebutt to meet their ends, all for the good of AA, of course. But in AA, we have at last learned that these folks, who may be a trifle sicker than the rest of us, need not to be really destructive at all, depending very much on how we relate ourselves to them. To begin with, we ought to listen carefully to what they say. Sometimes they are telling the whole truth, at other times, a little truth. More often, though, they are just rationalizing themselves into nonsense. If we are within range, the whole truth, the half truth, or no truth at all can prove equally unpleasant to us. This is why we have to listen so carefully. If they have got the whole truth, or even a little truth, then we had better thank them and get on with our respective inventories, admitting we were wrong. If it is nonsense, we can ignore it. Or we can lay all the cards on the table and try to persuade them. Failing this, we can be sorry they are too sick to listen, and we can try to forget the whole business. There are few better means of self-survey and of developing genuine patience than the workouts these usually well-meaning but erratic brother members afford us. This is always a large order, and we shall sometimes fail to make good on it ourselves, but we must keep trying. End quote. In Concept 3, Bill talks about ultimate authority and delegated responsibility, and goes on to say, the right AA solution for this problem is to be found, however, in the latter part of Tradition 2, which provides for trusted servants. This really means we ought to trust our responsible leaders to decide, within the understood framework of their duties, how they will interpret and apply their own authority and responsibility to each problem or situation as it arises. This sort of leadership discretion should be the essence of the right of decision. And I am certain that we need not have the slightest fear of granting this indispensable privilege at nearly every level of world service. There will always be plenty of ultimate authority to correct inefficiency, ineffectiveness, or abuse. If the conference does not function well, the groups can send in better delegates. If the trustees get badly out of line, the conference can censure them or even reorganize them. If the headquarters services go sour, the trustees can elect better directors and hire better help. These remedies are ample and direct. But so for long as our world service functions reasonably well, there should always be charity for occasional mistakes. Then trust must be our watchword. Otherwise, we shall end up leaderless. End quote. Bill closes the Concept 3 essay with, "Our entire AA program rests squarely upon the principle of mutual trust. We trust God, we trust AA, and we trust each other. Therefore, we cannot do less than trust our leaders in service. The right of decision that we offer them is not only a practical means by which they may act and lead effectively, but it is also the symbol of our implicit confidence." Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Our next past trustee that will share with us is Marita R.
Thank you, Jim. I'm back. Aloha prasa. My name is Marita, and I am an alcoholic. And like Tom, I'm a first-year past trustee, new to this panel, but I live in this region, so I've been watching this panel the whole time I've been here. And I learned many things. One of the first things I learned about this panel is they're given a topic. The next thing I learned is most of them will ignore the topic. I learned that they tell you ahead of time how many minutes you have, 7. And then as you arrive on the stage, they go, "Oh, you have 11. I won't take up 11 minutes. I want to address the topic just for a second so that I can check the box and feel like I've done everything I'm supposed to do before I do what I want to do. Not an old pattern you might recognize of mine. But the problem is I have to look it up on my phone, and I'm sure I'm going to drop the cane in the process because I'm not very good at this. Our topic is supposed to be finding common ground. You know, I think about common ground, and what I think about is surviving on that ship. You know, we're the survivors that made it through to Alcoholics Anonymous. We were the drowning. We have a common peril. I don't have any other common ground with most of you. You know, we have different backgrounds, different religions, different everythings. And so it's really easy for me to slide into othering. You know, they're not my peeps because I don't understand them. And so I really truly believe that our singleness of purpose is the most important thing we have. That's what drives our unity. That's what gives us our common ground. Every time we get off that, I think we get lost. Our region has a tendency to speak truth a lot, sometimes appreciated and sometimes not. But I have to tell you, that same Jackie, my sponsor, when I became a past delegate, what they taught delegates as they rotated was, okay, now your job is to envision yourself sitting on a back porch and rocking, and the assembly is playing in the yard, and they're going to get into scrapes, and they're going to get bumped knees, and they're going to have hurt feelings, and you go, "Oh, honey, I'm so sorry, it'll be okay." Kind of what Tom said, but he said it with Bill's words, so it sounded much better. But that was the idea. And then she's past trustee, and she said, however, if they run into the street, you'd be the first one out there screaming at them to tell them get back in the yard where they belong. And so I think that's part of the responsibility of being a past, is to protect us when we don't realize we might be making an error. And then what happens is we say our piece, and then we go back sitting on the rocking chair. The other thing my sponsor did when she came up her very first year is, you know who I am. You've seen me through all my service positions. If I have something else to say, I'll come back up here, but until then, I won't. And she never came up to the podium again. That may be me, I'm here to tell you, but I think I can be too opinionated that I'll probably show up next year and have something to say. The last thing I want to talk about, well, two things. One is to our Spanish speakers. God, I love our Spanish speakers. I look at the way they do general service, where they meet every week so they can have concept studies, and they all get together and visit all the groups that don't have GSRs so that they're included and tell them what's going on. And, you know, over the years, I realized that is really a good theory when, like, a bunch of people show up at your meeting every week, and you don't get time to talk because they're all talking about, we're really glad to see you, and we wish you joined. It's easier to send a GSR than have all these people show up. My Spanish speakers have taught me a lot about AA. So I'm really sorry that Friday didn't work out. It's a program that the General Service Board has been using. We tried it at a forum, we tried it at the International, and it got high praise. When I was an area secretary, we tried to translate, this was way back when the dinosaurs roamed, we tried to translate minutes into Spanish for the first time. I don't speak Spanish. My son was a high school Spanish student, and he used to take it to his teacher, and they would correct the minutes, and that's how we got Spanish minutes. Hey, it worked. We didn't care. And so after 6 months of doing minutes, they asked me, what's the name of our cat? Excuse me? And they're so polite about it. You know, they're so kind. They don't want to cause any stir. They just wanted to be able to report to the groups the name of the cat. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. They said, yeah, every month you collect money, food for the cat. Food kitty does not translate quite well like we thought it would. But the point of the story is they were so grateful for any assistance, they were willing to take what we gave them. What I'm proud of is the Spanish speakers in the Pacific region have had interpretation at all our meetings since the early 2000s. It's in our guidelines that they have to have it for PRASA. And I am so proud of them that they're now so used to being our equal partner that they'll complain. Hallelujah. I can't wait till we have interpretations in 5 languages here. And now the last thing I want to talk about is George Dorsey. He has been our closer up here for years. I have thought about him so often. When I was a new GSR, he would walk the back of the room with that cigar. You know, he wasn't smoking it, just chewing it, and he'd be using it to point at people. And, you know, he just had lots of things he wanted to teach. And he and Ruth used to scare the daylights out of me, you know. They had every possible job there was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were so damn competent, I thought, oh my God, I don't want them to know my name. I will miss him dearly. He went from being scary George in the back of the room that I avoided to an extremely good friend. And so I just think we need to talk and keep saying his name so he's still here. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Marita. Our next past delegate is Kathy F.
Jennifer was my host in Western Washington recently, and she's awesome. Thank you. Aloha. I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. It's so nice not to be first. And, you know, I get so nervous for this because I still am, you know, driven by self-centered fear sometimes, you know. I'm sure you can't relate. I thought, man, if I prepare, I might not be so scared. So I prepared a little bit this time. I served as the Pacific Regional Trustee from 2018 to 2022. And during that time, I had the honor of chairing the Grapevine Board as well. My home group is Free at Last in Tucson. There's a bunch of us here. Another one on the dais. We are currently reading, we're a literature group, and we're currently reading the Plain Language Big Book. We're almost through with it, and it has been really wonderful. People from other meetings have come, and we've had so many comments about, you know, and these are people with sponsors who've had, you know, the book explained, but we've had so many comments about how wonderful it is just to understand and get a different, you know, view, and to just be able to read it and understand it for the first time. Thank you, Hawaii, for hosting PRASA. It has been, the presentation, the presenters have been amazing. They really were prepared, and I heard some really great things, so I hope you've all had a great time. It's really hard to be up here without George. You know, I think that's what, for me, before I came up, I always look forward to. I've never been to a PRASA where George was not on this past trustees panel. And I have to, you know, they have the caution tape up here, but one PRASA, George fell off the stage. And that wasn't that long ago. I mean, might have been, I don't know how long ago it was, but I ran over there and I said, and he popped up and I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yes, I'm very good at falling." And he was fine. I mean, that's a long way. So, but the last time I spoke with George was on October 4th of this year. It was his 64th AA birthday. And it was on a Saturday, and he was out running errands, doing Saturday chores, and he was very jovial, you know, this past 6 months or so, every conversation that I had with George, he was really looking forward to his 100th birthday. So he was like, 64, that's nothing. It's not even like, you know, one of the big ones. But, you know, so he made it to 98 and a half. And George did so much for Alcoholics Anonymous. He served on our General Service Board. He served as area's delegate. He served as the general manager of our office. But mostly, I think, for the 64 years, he carried the message to thousands of alcoholics. And for that, I'm super grateful. He truly leaves a legacy of service in his wake. He deeply cared about AA and each one of us. I spoke with him often, but I always had to be prepared because George had a lot to say. Especially one-on-one, because one thing I learned about George and try to, you know, be like him when I'm up here is that George, he did have a lot to say, and sometimes he was deeply concerned and just ticked off at some of the things he saw. But when he got up here, he was always respectful and loving and kind. He got his point across by still being respectful. And so I really appreciate that. And you know, when I was on the board, I mean, we didn't always agree about everything. And he was a safe place to disagree with. But no matter how our conversations went, we always ended with, "I love you." And I sure do miss him. This past year has been a very tough year for my husband and I. He has had a very aggressive cancer. He's in remission now and here, and we are, you know, glad to be in Hawaii. You know, AA has taught the two of us what true partnership is, and it's helped us get through each and every day. We, you know, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have good relations with our family, our biological family, and we have so much support in the AA community. And so we just appreciate everyone's that reached out to us or thought of us during this time. So now I want to talk about what I really want to talk about. Is it time? Is time up? So I want to talk a little bit about AA finances. And I'm going to go back a bit because I think, like me, we forget what we've been through in this past 6 years. As you know, during and after the pandemic, prices rose tremendously. Many of AA's publishing vendors shut down, and paper and printing went through the roof. I was serving on the Grapevine board at the time. We had to find new vendors because they could not keep their doors open. Book sales plummeted, as you know, we forget quickly, but all the in-person meetings shut down, intergroup shut down, book sales plummeted, and we were in a real bind. We had to take a drawdown. I think we took, in a short period of time, $4 million from our prudent reserve so that we could carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic, pay our bills, pay our special workers. And contributions grew during that time. They grew quite a bit. We had record contributions. They went up, and then they leveled out, and they've kind of come down a little bit since then. And prices have begun to slow, so all that is good. But the one thing that has plummeted is the percentage of groups that contribute to those that serve us, that we can, for the services that we can't do in our groups. So prices went up, contributions went up, and the group's percentage just plummeted. 13 years ago, I was a delegate, and the percentage of groups that made contributions was 42%. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, that is concerning, you know? And so as a delegate, I talked a lot about that with our groups in our area. Today, they're at 29% of the groups that are contributing. That's a decrease of 13% in 10 years. And if this is true for the General Service Board contributions, it's also true for our intergroups, our districts, and our areas. The decrease is for many different reasons. We all have our reasons, right? But as you can see, we're not keeping up. I know that way back, I served on the board during the pandemic, and I know that way back, we were cutting things. We stopped sending box 459 out, which saved almost $500,000 a year. There was so many things, but I mean, we're cutting services. And our staff members work around the clock as it is. So contributions in the basket and passed on to the entities below the groups are the evidence. So when we make contributions in the basket and pass those on to the entities that serve us, we are exercising our final responsibility. In concept one, we learn about the group's ultimate authority and final responsibility. And we all love our authority. I hear about it constantly in workshops and beyond, what the authority that we all have. But I'm not hearing much about our responsibility. And one of my responsibilities as a member is to make sure that the services that we can't do at the group level are funded and to build the reserves for the next storm. In concept one, Bill says, if these vital agencies were to collapse or bog down, our unity within and the carrying the message without would suffer serious and perhaps irreparable damage. Again, contributions are evidence of our groups growing up and exercising our final responsibility. I'd like to take a minute with some words from George, because I think he said it very well. These are from a talk he gave in Baltimore when he was the general manager at the General Service Office. His talk was on Tradition 7, 8, and 9. George said, "But now I do want to get to the heart of the matter, maybe the heart and soul of the matter, and that is, since I first started going to AA meetings, the basket, the process of the basket, has been something that I have just been in awe of. It has been said that the basket is where money and spirituality come together in AA, and this process of passing the basket at a meeting and what goes on thereafter is a totally spiritual process." And don't red light George.
I heard about that.
And I'm talking George's word. "The process of passing the basket and what follows has been part of my whole AA life." He goes on to say, "The process continues at the group level when the treasurer counts the money and takes care of the group expenses. Then, if there is any left over, the group decides who it should go to in terms of supporting AA services. This is a continuation of the spiritual process and shows an understanding on the part of the group and a feeling that they want to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. They are indeed transactions that are totally spiritual." My last sentence. He goes on to quote an outside auditor that Alcoholics Anonymous contracted for over 40 years, Bud Flanagan. Bud referred to contributions as the mortar that holds the fellowship of AA together, and they are vital from the standpoint of unity. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Our next past trustee is David N.
Aloha prasa. Aloha. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David. I served as a director on the AA World Services Board from 2013 to 2021. And for the last 4 years of that, I simultaneously served as a general service trustee on the General Service Board. Excuse me. I'd like to thank Bob and the process committee for inviting me to speak today. Like others have said before me, it feels very odd to be on a past trustees panel without George being present. I am positive, though, that he is watching us and wishing he was here with us so that he could gently tell us how to do it right. It was also mentioned that we initially were told we have 7 minutes, but now have 11. I planned for 7 minutes, so I'm going to give you about 7 minutes. George, you can have whatever I don't use. Lately, I've been thinking about many of the changes that AA has gone through over the last several years. I think there could be value in reviewing those changes and the impacts that they have had on our fellowship. And somehow, Bob H., wherever you are, I may be able to bring this around to the theme of this process, finding common ground, which was also our topic for this panel. And as a heads up, many of my thoughts have been mirrored in previous presentations this weekend. My day job used to be healthcare information technology management. It sounds bigger than it really is. In 1997, I was on a project team that introduced email and browser-based internet access to our entire healthcare system, only 29 years ago. Back then, the leading browser was Netscape. Anybody remember that? Yeah, some, okay. Could we have imagined then how deeply the internet would become part of our global infrastructure. I certainly did not. The internet has become the primary source for communication and information for all of us, and that includes professionals. Most professionals only get their journals, their drug information sheets online today. As a result, the conference responded by approving a presence on the professional platform LinkedIn. Later, we created a presence on Instagram, a very popular social media platform for communication and sharing. The internet has also become the world's financial and purchasing infrastructure as well. The advent of Amazon and other similar companies has changed consumers' expectations about purchasing and delivery. AA has responded by allowing online literature purchases and online contributions. As you all know, the internet also played a huge role in how we responded to the pandemic. To this day, I am amazed by and grateful for how our fellowship responded to all of us being confined in our own homes through a grassroots effort that arose completely organically. The fellowship went online almost overnight. People were able to get and stay sober as a result. And at a time when, from what I understand, alcohol sales went through the roof. I suspect some new members and potential members were created during that time. The existence of online groups was an incredible boon for the recovery of all of us. But there have been downsides also. As Kathy just discussed, there was a huge impact on contributions and literature sales, and we're still dealing with some of the after effects of that time. I understand that there has been a significant decline in literacy in this country. The conference responded with the Plain Language Big Book. Now, this change has been controversial within the fellowship. However, I'd like us to keep in mind that prisons, remote communities, and those who have reading difficulties really like the Plain Language Big Book. They are being well served, and we are more efficiently reaching the still suffering alcoholic as a result. My overall point is that as a fellowship, we respond appropriately to outside issues when we need to. Our goal is always, how can we more effectively carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic? As many have talked about in previous presentations this weekend, outside issues do impact us. And outside issues can also be present in our meetings themselves. Do we ignore these issues? Or do we come to a group conscience about some solution through loving debate, discussion, and vote at our business meetings? It's my opinion, and my opinion only, and I'm usually very clear about letting you know when it's my opinion. It's my opinion that Bill's biggest fear that led to the creation of Tradition 10 was that we would follow the path of the Washingtonians, excuse me, that as a fellowship, we would take on public positions on outside issues and thus lose sight of our primary purpose. We would fade away just as the Washingtonians did. I'm not sure that his intent was that we should ignore outside issues when they arise in our groups and service entities, but mostly that we not take public positions on those outside issues. My hope would be that someday we could find common ground around acceptance that AA does and will change in response to outside issues that impact us. In my opinion, the AA that Bill and Bob had in the 30s would be lost in today's world. And we can remember that if a change we make does not work or isn't effective, we can drop it. No conference action is binding on the next conference. And let's remember, we've survived a lot already. We argued passionately about whether the GSO was going to sell sobriety chips. Remember the fights over smoking and non-smoking meetings? The printer's manuscript controversy has to some extent faded away. To some extent. And with all of that, we're still here, we are still vibrant, and we are still serving society. Let's not ignore outside issues. Let's not fear change so long as it is based on our primary purpose. Let's embrace it, find common ground in acceptance of it, and continue to carry the message to the alcoholics who still suffer. And let's always remember Thumper's words to Bambi: if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. Love and tolerance, y'all. Love and tolerance. Thank you all very much.
All right. Thank you, David. Our next past trustee is Ginger R.
Aloha, friends. I'm Ginger, and I am an alcoholic. And it's always a privilege to be up here, and at least it gets just a little bit easier each time. But I'm so happy to be here and be with all of you. And I was able to have one of my sponsees come along this time, and we got to spend a lot of time together. So thank you to the committee. Thank you to all of our presenters for such a wonderful process here today. I actually am going to talk about our theme, finding common ground. And what I'm going to talk about, finding common ground, is the God of our understanding. I was raised Methodist, and so when I came to AA, I had no issue with God. I had a very spiritual experience when a boss did an intervention and asked if I was an alcoholic. I said yes and started to cry. He asked if I was willing to do something about it, and I said yes. He had already arranged for me to go to treatment. Before I left, he made me go tell all my staff where I was going. So a little lesson in humility. But over the years, I've become really attuned to hearing so much about God in meetings. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my service history, and that will help you understand part of where I'm coming from. I was a non-trustee. I was a panel 48 delegate from Washington State East Area 92, which was a really long time ago. And then I was a non-trustee director from 2007 to 2011 on the Grapevine Board. Then I became a general service trustee from 2017 to 2021, also Grapevine Board and on the General Service Board. So I spent 8 years on the Grapevine Board. So when I was a non-trustee director, we serve on various committees, trustees committees from on the General Service structure, and I was on the literature committee and asked to chair a little subcommittee because we had had a request to produce a pamphlet for the Atheists and Agnostics. So this was, you know, this was a long time ago. And I read the background material, and there was one letter in there that so struck me, it opened my mind to things I had never considered. You know, it was an atheist that wrote this. I'm not going to share exactly what it was, but I still remember that. And having that, oh my gosh, how does that work? The pamphlet went to the conference and was voted down. I think it went to the conference a few more times over the years and was never approved for a very long time. But as I go forward today, as a past delegate, past trustee, I am focusing today on my work at the, you know, my responsibilities at the very most basic level, especially in my home group. They don't all know what my history is. What they do know is when I chair meetings, I usually have something to pique their thought or something controversial to share on, because I think one of my responsibilities for me is to have people open up to awareness of all of our diversity. And we don't always sit in our meetings and think about that. My home group is Women in Gratitude in Mesa, Arizona. We have about 30 to 40 women that come every Tuesday, and we have at least 20 in our group conscience meetings. So we're very involved. And so I brought this up as one of the topics. And I used a Grapevine article, several actually, but the one in particular is, and you can go to the archives and find it, is AA for Christians Only. Well, that brought up a few things because everybody's talking about their God and, you know, one of the women I kind of felt an affinity for is an atheist. And she's expressed that openly, and we didn't always have that, of different ideas of our higher power or no higher power. You know, for me to think that they have to have a higher power to be sober, it's ridiculous. For me to think that, you know, they have to have what I have. I have changed over the years in my thinking. I have a higher power that I cannot explain, but it is not a Christian higher power. And I'm fine with all those who have any belief, but I think we ought to talk about it, because I know for many years I've known atheists who never would say that they were. So I have been asked, I've done chairing an online meeting. I've been asked to do this. It's, I don't know where it is, you know, it's virtual. It's called Recovery at the Resort. And you put together a panel of about four or five people and bring up a topic. And so this is the topic I'm bringing forward to that meeting. And I think it's on the 15th of March. Oh, that's this month now. And the woman who's the atheist is going to be on the panel. I have a sponsee that has a very different spiritual program. I'll have one on there who is very religious Christian. You know, so we'll have that mix and we'll talk about how we stay sober, with whatever we believe. And I'm pretty sure that everybody doesn't think about these things all the time, and I like to think about them. But, you know, and to bring a Grapevine article, you know, almost actually says to the group, oh, there's another source. It's just not Ginger thinking this way. And I like to use Grapevine articles a lot. Well, of course, after 8 years on the Grapevine board, you know, you'd expect that I would. So that's kind of where I am on that. So where I find myself in my sobriety these days, and Wednesday will be my 39th sobriety anniversary. I'm leaving here today to Kauai to meet my husband, and I will be at a morning 7 a.m. meeting on Wednesday in Kauai. So, you know, what a wonderful blessing to have that to look forward to. So, one of my purposes or responsibility is to bring AA members to open their minds, to think, to see differences that they may not see. I mean, basically, my home group is a bunch of white women from age 18 to, I think there's somebody that's 80, but I'm close. Is to be a teacher, a mentor, to help people learn their way. And that's kind of how I think we build leaders, is to expose people to different ideas. And so thank you so much for being here today and allowing me to share. Mahalo.
Thank you, Ginger. Our next past trustee is Nancy H.
Aloha. I feel I can say that today because my dear friend Scott lent me an aloha shirt, a kind gesture to a kama'ana so I could feel that I was somehow honoring this beautiful place and all of you who have worked so hard to bring us this prasa. It really has been a great prasa. The presenters have all done spectacular jobs. My name is Nancy Haynes. I'm an alcoholic. I am, of course, a past trustee, because otherwise I would have crashed this table. Much like Marita, I knew Ruth and George from the time I got sober. But when I say I knew, I mean I recognized who they were. I certainly didn't speak to them for years. And George especially, I come out of California North Coastal, so I especially knew a lot about George. And there was a time when I was a DCM, which meant I was probably maybe 3 years sober, maybe not. And there was a subcommittee, and the members of this subcommittee were me and four guys, George, the alternate delegate, and two older men with, I swear, 100 years sobriety each. And they were all much taller than I was. Well, not so much George, especially if I wore heels, but the other ones were quite large. So we hold our first meeting at the assembly where we were appointed, and George said immediately, okay, I think Nancy should be our chair. I was petrified. I spent hours creating agendas. I, of course, also had to take the minutes because none of them would. And we would meet at George's house every few weeks and sit at the dining room table, and I would attempt to bring some order to the proceedings. Completely, it didn't work at all. And I think we ended up, when we submitted our report, There was the one I wrote on behalf of the committee, and there were the four dissenting opinions. And that was my introduction to George. And shortly thereafter, not through no fault of my own, he went to New York to become the general manager, so I didn't see him again for a while. But my last memory of George, I am so happy I have, is I had lunch with him the day before his 98th birthday. And first I had to go to his house because I had not met his current dog. And George felt this was quite a failing on my part. But I'm not in New York a lot, so it was hard. So I came and met Tripp, who did not seem interested particularly in me. And then we went out to lunch, and we had a three-hour lunch. That means I ate lunch, and George talked to me for 3 hours and explained things I needed to know. And I treasured that memory. And the next day was his 98th birthday, and he was going off to Maui. And I found out a couple weeks later he'd decided 98 was close enough to 100 that he would tell people he was really 99 so he could celebrate 100 for 2 years in a row. Now that made sense to me because I come from a family where my grandmother, who looked really good for her age, lied about cut off 10, 15 years easily, and then thought, wait, if I look this good for my fake age, I'm going to tell people my real age, only she didn't. She went up 5 years. So she went from 65 to 85 on her next birthday. And I just thought that's what old people did. I didn't know. I'm thinking of doing that, but I forgot to lie about the 15 years before, so it won't be nearly as impressive. The theme of that we were told, finding common ground, I really like, and I want to say how extremely that we don't have to find common ground. How lucky we are that as such a large group of people, we have the extremely valuable, lovely gift of being sober alcoholics. And that, to me, is the most common ground you could possibly have. I mean, I don't care about size, shape, age, gender. If I meet another sober alcoholic, we meet. We meet right away. It isn't like other relationships. And to have the privilege of being in a room, a giant room of sober alcoholics, is stunning to me. And in fact, this is my 35th PRASA. I had to miss a couple. And I will tell you, when I was also a panel 49 delegate, and when I got to the conference, I was sort of disappointed because I was used to going from my home group to my sub-district to my district to my area, and Area 06 is the big area, and then I went back to this little room, and I thought, oh, but of course, inside that little room are all the people we were there to represent, so it's quite large. And the other thing I wanted to read is, I even printed it out so I could correctly quote. It's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 77, step 8. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. And I think that's been the whole story of my life in AA, a moving and fascinating adventure. And for those of you who, how many are here at their first PRASA? Oh! Okay, welcome. And I will tell you, if you are at all confused, at my first PRASA, I did not understand one single word. One person said, except Ruth, who was the dinner speaker. So I have always listened to what Ruth says because she's always, if I can't understand anybody else, I can figure out what Ruth is saying. But if you are confused and overloaded and thinking you have to go home and sleep for 36 hours to clear your mind, which was my state, come back. come back the next year and the next year, because it isn't, there's tremendous information available, there's tremendous things to learn, things to do, but most importantly to me, at this, certainly at this stage, there are the people you meet, your lifelong friends. And much as I am always happy to be in a room full of alcoholics, this is especially dear to me. And there are people that I see once a year that we run up and hug. Oh, and I have to say, if like I, you have slightly faltering eyesight, Ginger, who has been my friend for years, I saw a woman who looked like Ginger and I ran up and hugged her, only she was too polite to say, I don't know who you are and I'm not Ginger. So it's good to look for a badge and a name tag before you get caught up in the spirit and attack total strangers in the elevator. At least that's a piece of advice I'm comfortable passing on to you. But the people that you meet, I mean, to me, that you, I have been extremely, extraordinarily grateful to be allowed to be into service. And to my home group sent me to be a GSR when I was 6 weeks sober. And you can imagine how valuable I was to the group. But for years, I thought it was to keep me away from the coffee pot. Because in our room, if you put the plug in the wrong socket, you blew everything for the NA meeting and the AA meeting. And I thought they could tell just by looking, I was all too likely. But it was years later, I thought, no, these kind people recognized what they had in me, or rather, what they didn't have in me, and they needed to give me a job that had a long term and that had a focus and that would keep me tethered to the ground. And they were willing to give up their own connection to AA. We had more than one meeting in my town, so it wasn't that they couldn't find anything, but they were willing to put up with that for me because they thought I needed it. And that, it took me years to figure that out, but I thought that is what service is to me. That it not only is because we need people to be part of the service pipeline and all of that, which we do, but sometimes we need people who need service. And when we recognize that, we try to match them with a job. Not coffee maker, usually, if you think they're a danger, but that, and I see that, I have seen that this weekend in everyone, and I thank you all. It's been, Alcoholics Anonymous gave me my life, but you all gave me the best part of my life in AA. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Our next past trustee is Paul C.
My name's Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. I was a panel 42 delegate, and then I was eventually a non-trustee director on AA World Services from 2002 to 2005, and a general service trustee on AAWS from 2005 to 2009. I was sick, sad, sorry, and suicidal one more time when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Before I go on, where is Paola? Where? There she is. Paola, and I'm probably mispronouncing her name, is the senior editor of Lavinia. Can you stand, please? Okay, so there she is, and I expect... I expect all of you who are interested in Lavinia will mob her after this session is over. Thank you, Pale. Thank you so much. I attended my first AA meeting in a county jail in upstate New York, where I had been lodged against my will, because in New York State, evidently, it's illegal to give LSD to undercover narcotics detectives. And I still remember what the guy said who came into the jail to put on the AA meetings. He said, "We didn't make Alcoholics Anonymous so hard that a drunk couldn't do it, or none of us would be here." I've never forgotten that. I also want to note how pleased I am to be a member of the South Oceanside Men's Group in Oceanside, California, which is part of the San Diego Imperial area. Not, calm down. it's the San Diego Imperial area. It's not Area 08, okay? I don't think I need to remember the geographic areas of 93 different numbers. It's a bit much, but I also want to say how glad I am that our general service representative is present, taking copious notes so he can report back to the group what a bad representative I was of the group. So, my sobriety date is January 15th, 1974. I was 21 years old at the time. I've now been sober 52 years. And if you do the arithmetic, you can figure out that I'm about 50 years old. So... sometimes, I think in AA, sometimes we look like that pilot joke. Pilot comes over the intercom and says, "Folks, I got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is we're lost. The good news is we're making great time." Okay? So that happens sometimes, okay? So let me simply know, oh, by the way, and George was a terrific guy, and one of my favorite memories of George is when Bob P. couldn't speak at our traditions breakfast. George was going to Australia, so he stopped in San Diego, and he stayed with us, and he... I remember him sitting there in his bathroom at the dinosaur table with my little son playing with Legos. They made a dinosaur, which we called the Legosaurus, and also a Dorsosaurus. He was a big kid at heart, really. Anyway, so historically, our... finances, our reserve fund has been aimed at 9 to 12 months of expenses of our three corporations, the General Service Board, Alcoholics Anonymous World Services, Inc., and the AA Grapevine, Inc. And the way we kept it in there was to adjust big book prices, okay? So a few years ago, all hell got loose with a public health emergency, of course, and things have been difficult since then. With the recent drawdown of $750,000 from the reserve fund and other expenses, currently our reserve fund from the uncorrected past minutes of the media past AA World Services minutes, our reserve fund is at 5.92 months and hurtling towards five months in the next few months. This is alarming. I got my eyes sometimes cooperate and sometimes don't. Okay. Oh, this reminds me of that passage from Ernest Hemingway's 1926 novel, The Sun Also Rises. Quote, "How did you go bankrupt?" Bill asked. "Two ways," Mike said. "Gradually and then suddenly." So this is kind of, one person told me, and I'm not sure I believe this, but somebody told me the biggest problem is overspending. And spending our money and our reserve fund like drunken sailors. And that's an insult to sailors. So our reserve fund is not a piggy bank to shore up difficulties. This is what management and good budgeting is for. Now, you can't budget for $1 million lack of contributions like we had last year. I get that. But come on, we can do something. I also want to suggest that non-for-profit law in New York State encourages the greatest possible openness about our finances. I got to tell you this. One time, after a meeting, some young guys come up to me and they want me to attend a rave. You've heard about these raves the young people have. Evidently, they stay up all night, listen to music, drink, dance, and take drugs all night long, and they call this a rave. I told them, you know, when I was young, we had something like that. We called it the weekend. There's nothing new under the sun here, okay? But I could certainly improve my handwriting, that's for sure. So I think not-for-profit law in New York State suggests the greatest possible openness about our finances and other matters that boards are concerned about. Certainly, personnel matters and legal issues should not be disclosed, but the rest of it should be open. And that's why I continued to be concerned about an alleged code of conduct, which keeps everybody buttoned up and not being able to share what's going on. And that's really not in the spirit of this wonderful fellowship that we are fortunate enough to be members of. And I think, how are we doing on time here? How much longer do I get to torture these people?
That's up to you.
Huh?
That's up to you.
No, it isn't.
26 seconds.
26 seconds?
But I'm going to give you another minute.
Holy shit. We should not be applauding foul language in Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay. I'm gonna close with this. And you're all grateful. So many people think that those up here are important people. I got just as drunk or drunker than you did. And so did they. I want to suggest that it is nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Thank you.
Our next, thank you, Paul. Our next past trustee is Greg M.
Hi, everybody. My name is Greg. I'm alcoholic. Most days it's under control. Other days it's not. So I need you to pray for me, and I'm going to ask several prayers be said. As you may or may not know, on my way to the International Convention this year, I got sick, and I had some major operations, and I'm probably about 95% back. But what's not here most days is that I could be talking to you, and I forget what I'm saying. So if I freeze up here, make sure you yell at me. I need lots of help. And I want to thank my dear friends on the dais for taking up all of my thoughts that I wrote down. And so to hell with that. So I, my sobriety date is, what is my sobriety? is Valentine's Day, 1978. And it was in Kihei, Maui, Hawaii, where I surrendered to my alcoholism, which I knew nothing about. But I want to talk to you about groups and service and that kind of stuff. So I had worked myself up. I was a panel 37 delegate, and I followed Ruth as regional trustee in 1990. And I went to New York City. Now, I had been living in Waihole Waikani, so the local folks know where that is. It's Chinaman's Hat on the North Shore, and I'd never been to New York. I lived here in Hawaii for 30 plus years, and I tell you, my heart is warm because of that experience. So in 1990, I went to my first board meeting, and some delegates and definitely trustees know that on Saturday there's always a sharing session that the General Service Board has topics, and all of the participants on that weekend, they get to share about it. Now, I'm a mouse from Hawaii, and I'm sitting very quietly because I'm it's all about me, and I'm uncomfortable, and I don't want to make an ass out of myself, so I just sit there and listen, which is a good trait sometimes. And they were there talking about the reserve fund, and Kathy told most of my story, and I think several else down the way did too. But I was sitting there and good sharing, and they were debating whether 9 months was enough reserve to get them through hard times, and that was what the consensus was. But the other side of the room were all bean counters and our outside auditors and some very smart people. And they shared at the end, and they thought that it ought to be about $18 million. And this is $1990. And so you could really, you know, bring that up higher and higher. And, whoa, look, we had planes flying into the tower. We had all kinds of stuff. We had pandemics. And we weren't prudent enough. We weren't foresighted enough. And so we need to do a lot of work together. And we can start off by saying some prayers. And the one I want you to join me in, if you so choose, is my sponsor for many, many, many years, is being airlifted from Southeast Asia to Hawaii. He's very, very sick. And so if you could just, the energy of sober people are so healing. So just a moment. Okay. I know he'll be all right for today. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my home group. You know, the day I surrendered and I was taken to my first meeting in the school in Kihei, you meet in a different room today. We were in an actual classroom. And I remember in there, and the folks who had a step one meeting, they all turned around and looked at me when they were talking. And especially because tears were coming down my eyes constantly. And I, you know, I'm self-centered, fear is the boogeyman for me. And I didn't want to, you know, I'm living in a car out in mud flats. And I'm worried about what they're going to think about me. But I had a crying spell, first time ever. But what was really meaningful to me, two guys came up to me afterwards and invited me to go on a 12-step call with them. And I mean, I'm 3 days dry. I'm not even close to having my wits about me. But I went with them, and it was a little funky apartment, and we got there, and it was filthy, and it was really a mess. And I was assigned KP duty while the two guys talked to the person that had asked for help. And I had never heard men, maybe women sometimes, use words of love and compassion, and they really touched this person. And they were touching me. And when I got back to my car later that evening, and before nodding out, I thought about what had happened to me. And I came to this realization that the last 2 hours, I had not thought about me once. Not once. And I know this is a room full of people that can identify with that kind of freedom from their head. And from that day to this day, I've not had a pill, fix, drink, nothing, zip. And not because of anything I did. It was because of the 12th step, the gift that we are challenged to give to whoever asks for it. We heard some numbers. I may repeat a couple of them, I think participation in AA, I mean, the dollar is the way that our financial people talk about how many groups. I think there's 55,000 groups, and they're giving, on average, per year, 56% of the contributing groups do that. And we're now, I have 32 on my paper, but someone said 29% of the known groups send money to the General Service Board with gratitude for the services they supply that help individuals like me get out of themselves. So I'd like to see a hands who have people in the room that have physically gone, or I guess electronically, gone on a 12-step call. That's great. And because you're in service, you hang around with all of us, and you know that's the way out. So the second warranty says that sufficient operating funds plus an ample reserve should be our prudent financial principle. So my group, I'm going to talk about my group, which is Steps to Freedom. And my heart ached. I got back here, and the Steps to Freedom group here has folded, has gone away. My home group is in in Las Vegas, where I live. So my home group's really weird, and I hope yours is weird like mine. So the last Thursday of the month, we have a home group meeting. The topic's always the same. What do we do with our finances? Well, we gotta pay rent. Coffee, we gotta have. District and area need some bucks. The GSR needs to be reimbursed. We send money to central office. We send money to the General Service Board and any other 12-step group that needs it. So we take our time in that. And sometimes we have some money to send on. Other times we don't. But we do send thank you notes for the service. How many are old long enough that sober that you got a contribution letter? Like in 1958 and 60s, the finance department at GSO would send out a receipt, a contribution that showed how much your group gave, or zero. But you got, it's just like you go shopping anywhere. You get a quarterly statement and you can pay for it or not. In 1958, 69% of the known groups were participating with their money. 69%. And what did I say? It's now 29%. I believe it's because we're not doing 12-step work. That's where the energy is. That's where God lives. That's where we need to be focused on sharing our experience, strength, and help whenever, wherever that we're asked to do so. I want to ask you to have a moment of silence for a second before that goes red. And that is, I think sometimes we hurt people, not on purpose, but they're hurt by our actions. And I've learned to try to be sensitive enough to remember to make amends for my actions. I hope all of you have that same attitude, and I need to be more sensitive to people. And I need to make sure that I hug them and love them. Let's not forget that we make mistakes, and we need to make amends for those mistakes. And with that, put the red light on.
All right, thank you, Greg. And closing us out is Ruth J.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ruth. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Second Edition group in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I didn't realize they gave us a topic, which we normally just ignore anyway. And I intend to do that. Age has its privileges. Somebody suggested when I came up here it would be nice if we had an empty chair for George, and it's right next to me. He was my trustee when I was a delegate. I'm a panel 29 delegate from Nevada. My whole sobriety has been in Las Vegas or Nevada. I have a lot of history, wonderful, wonderful times. Happy to share it. I mean, I love going over it, but it's best when I'm able to share it. And yes, I have been taped many times. I prefer to be known. I went through a women's recovery house called We Care. Another We Care girl. Just Ruth from We Care. I didn't know you were anything else. Well, I said, that's fine. That's what I am. I'm Ruth from We Care, and I'm an alcoholic. So a couple of serious things, and then we're going to have some fun. The serious things have been mentioned, and most of the presenters have covered things that I would say, and I would heartily second it. We need to be gentle with people who have made mistakes. Who in this room has not made a mistake in AA? I'd like to see those hands. And speak to you afterward about how you accomplished that. We had an area treasurer take off of the money. Hopefully you'll have an experience like that and you know how to handle it. We don't take it to the courts. For leadership, I always, and we're coming up this fall in election assembly, I recommend people read Concept 9 about leadership. And the concepts may be a little dry for everybody, but Concept 12 kind of wraps it all up for us about how we don't punish those that make mistakes, thank goodness, or say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And the other thing, we're a self-correcting fellowship. If we make a mistake, we can admit it and move on. It takes a long time to accomplish some things in Alcoholics Anonymous. My area knows that I often tell the elephant joke, which is, if you want something done in AA, it's like two elephants making love. It's done at a rather high level, seems to be. A lot of trumpeting and yelling about it, and it'll take at least 2 years to see results. So remember that when you're passionate about getting something done. Our treasurer came back and paid the money back and made amends, but not all of them do. It's a lesson for us to be careful who we elect. I have a home group. I've always had a home group. I have outlived a couple of sponsors, and I was not happy to be here in the beginning. My first process was 1973. My sobriety date is June 26, 1970. And I celebrated 55 years this last June. So, I'm about 10 years behind George on both numbers. He was my trustee when I was a delegate. He taught me how to be gentle with people and how to get those of you who do not speak up promptly, like some of us do, to draw you out and get your ideas. And you don't give yes and no question, or question that you can answer with a yes and no. We want to know what you're thinking. If you have ever been in a group inventory or an area inventory and seen a minority voice stand up and change the opinion of the whole group, it's amazing. So his presence will be felt for a long time. We talked about our responsibility declaration here. Said it a couple of times. It's not a pledge. We don't have pledges in AA. It's a declaration that that we want the hand of AA to be there. And sometimes that means to show the person to the correct fellowship. It doesn't necessarily mean to take them into ours, but it doesn't mean shutting the door on them either. We're the oldest fellowship. We should be polite to others and show them where they need to be. I think that's all the lessons for today, but I feel strongly about those, and taking up too much non-meeting time at Meet at Your Home group, and at least once a year looking at your finances and do you need to adjust where you're sending your money. Greg's group does it every month. I kind of drag ours into looking at it once a year, maybe twice a year, if somebody needs something. What I've learned that what we have in alcoholism is very serious. It's cunning, baffling, powerful, and potentially deadly. I always say that when we read that part of chapter 5. I've seen people die of it. My two parents, to begin with, my sister died with 35 years sobriety, and I have spawned one who is working on it. My children were 6 and 12 when I came to AA. They are now both senior citizens. I don't know how that happens. And bless all of you who know me or have seen me at many presses. I think this is my 49th or 50th, that you come up and say, oh, it's so nice to see you. I'm Jane from Northern California or wherever you're from, because my memory was never that good for all the faces and names, and they don't always print them big enough for you to read. These are a little better than some. So thank you for that. And I now travel with people who watch out for me because my balance isn't as good as it used to be. So my daughter makes sure I have guardians around me. And I thank my guardians for this weekend. With all the seriousness of our disease and keeping our fellowship afloat and financially fit and restraining our spending habits sometimes, it's just too easy with Amazon. I'm not talking about AA, I'm talking about personally. you know, just push a button and you got it. I think I want to enjoy my sobriety. I've done things outside of Alcoholics Anonymous that allowed me to return to civilization outside, and I've done things in outside organizations, but I never would have done without being sober, and thanks to you. I had a sponsor in the beginning that forced me to do those steps and told me what I was going to do, where I was going to go. I was 7 days sober when I went to a meeting, and the chairperson, the lady, said, "You're my co-chair." And I said, "What does that mean? What does that mean?" And she said, "Well, you can read, can't you?" "Yes, I could read." You read chapter 5. So that was my start. My first process was in Las Vegas in 1973. There were 230 people there. I hadn't a clue what you were saying. So if it's your first time and you wonder what it is, you have to keep coming back. I liked the feeling in the room. And if you like the feeling in the room, those of us that want to perpetuate our fellowship, please come back because we need you. GSRs, DCMs, that's the hardest job. It's like herding cats. And my hat's off to you. I was a delegate in 1979, 1980, so I had 9 years sobriety, so you can do things with relatively little sobriety. Certainly made some mistakes. There was no internet, hand wrote all my reports, gave it to somebody who typed better than me and typed it up. We've come a long way, but I want you to have some fun with your sobriety, and it's not all doom and gloom and seriousness that we think maybe at the beginning it would be. And I don't know, many of you have heard me say this before, but it's important, I think. You know, we have control over so few things in life. Sometimes I don't even have control over me and what I say. I have some scars on my tongue because I try to restrain I want newcomers to feel safe and accepted. And I don't want them to hear a lot of F-bombs or S-bombs in their first meeting. That's not the kind of fellowship I want to belong to. But you can have some fun, and whatever you control in your life, maybe your child, we do control children for a while, your cat or your dog or whatever, but there's something that you like in order. Might be the socks in your drawer, might be the way your T-shirts are folded, I don't know. For me, it is very important that you hang the toilet paper correctly. I always get a lot of identification with that one. And yes, if you're not sure, if I come to your house, you will be sure when I leave. I am recovered enough so I don't feel impelled to do it in hotels and on airplanes anymore, but I had to get control of that along my sobriety. So I think I'm here today because George isn't. I didn't have any plans to be here, and I didn't make Alaska for the same thing. Travel is more difficult as you get older. It takes more out of you. So I'm here because George isn't. And I hope to see you all in Seattle. Thanks.